Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here is Peter Royce.
Groups tackling issues of media ownership concentration and providing criticisms of the mainstream have been around for many years. But over the last couple, public interest has exploded to create a new movement for media democracy. Sita Gangadharan has been involved in groups working on media democracy issues and most recently researching this new movement. Sita Gangadharan is the policy specialist for the newly formed non-profit Center for International Media Action. She's joined me on the phone this morning from her home in San Francisco. Good morning, Sita, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning, Peter.
So maybe I could start by asking you, what are the factors that have led to this recent surge in interest in media democracy issues over the last couple of years?
Well, the most obvious thing that has happened in the past recent months is that many American citizens have felt that they're not getting a fair representation of what's going on in the war in Iraq. And I would say that this is really a kind of critical mass uprising against the mainstream coverage that we've seen and the fact that we're not really getting an entire picture of what's going on. In addition to that, there have been a number of new media democracy organizations that have come up throughout the United States, realizing that it's not just working with union media workers, with media professionals, with media educators, but kind of moving outside of that locus and connecting up with other social justice advocates. So you have people connecting up with anti-globalization protesters, environmental justice protesters or organizations, youth media or youth justice advocates, quite a number of other social justice movements getting involved in this issue.
Has this been happening in the context of changes to the Telecommunications Act or the regulations down there?
Absolutely. When the 1996 Telecommunications Act passed in the United States, there was barely an uproar. And part of the reason for that was because mainstream media did not cover it. They did not want to be scrutinized or under the gun. And because of the radical changes in the structure of the media and communications system, people have actually felt on a day-to-day basis what it's like to have a deregulated and more irresponsible media system. So people have been losing their jobs, whether that means being able to place advertising in the local radio market, which has been gobbled up by conglomerates like Clear Channel Radio, or things like trying to actually get on the air, work with public affairs directors who actually now don't exist because they have been squeezed out of the working infrastructure of broadcast outlets. So people are certainly realizing that the consequences of the 1996 Telecommunications Act have been enormous. You see the changes. You see it in the. You hear it in the quality of the media that you're receiving. You recognize that local news, in particular, is not responding to community needs and not reflecting what's happening in people's lives. So
what has this new surge of energy meant for groups that have been traditionally working on media democracy issues?
For groups, for example, in San Francisco, there is an organization called Media Alliance, which has been around for, I think, 28 years. And, you know, they've been kind of at the heart of these struggles, trying to democratize media systems and media practices in and around the Bay Area, but also nationally. And for them, it has been an incredible confidence boost to see people around them going, tapping on their resources, tapping on their expertise, really drawing on their historical knowledge of the issues and how the United States has, you know, slowly, how the government has slowly kind of chipped away at regulations and conventions to keep a fair and balanced media system in place. So for them, they've been able to take a certain amount of leadership, and I think that that goes for other organizations around the country, that it's kind of reinvigorating these media democracy institutions that came about during the cable movement in the 80s and 70s, or community access, public access television, community technology centers. A number of different types of media democracy institutions have really found new ways to connect up with other civil society organizations, and in some cases, actually take on a very prominent civic role, kind of leading demonstrations, but actively drawing in different members of the community, different political representatives, you know, conservatives and liberals, to come together and vigorously debate this issue. So, you know, they're not so much a 4-H club, but in some ways they have kind of taken on a more central position in the debate that really unites a variety of opinions on the issue.
I was going to ask you about that with these new alliances forming. I wonder if there's any dangers. You mentioned alliances with conservative groups, for instance, that are not traditionally a partner in media democracy issues. I wonder if you've got any thoughts around those sort of alliances and the way they're developing.
It was certainly a surprise for many of us to be to realize that groups like the National Rifle Association or their state affiliates or several organizations working on morality in the media, decency issues, coming from a more Christian right-wing background, were getting involved with these issues. And you did see some sort of unlikely alliances of groups coming together. I do have to say that some of the coalition aspect was kind of created by the mainstream media. The mainstream media did pick up on this, and a common trope towards the vote at the Federal Communications Commission in June, the common trope that came up over and over again was from the National Organization of Women to the National Rifle Association. And so these two very unlikely organizations getting together. But, you know, they were in the room and they were coming down on the same side against rollback of media ownership limits. But it wasn't such a close connection. And progressives, media democracy advocates, recognized the danger of kind of conservative groups taking the media spotlight. And so since then, there have been a number of efforts on the part of media democracy advocates to make sure that they're maintaining relationships with both political leaders, with, for example, the two Democratic commissioners at the Federal Communications Commission, to maintain connections with members of the press, with other local politicians and community stakeholders, to really make it known that they media democracy, as media democracy advocates, we want to instill a certain sense of inclusiveness without necessarily letting conservative groups kind of take off with it, or, you know, get the better of us in terms of this issue.
Now, can you tell me a bit more about the work that you're doing with media democracy groups for the Center for International Media Action, which I understand is also a new group that's come out of this re-energizing?
That's certainly true. We, at the Center for International Media Action, we've been embarking, we're very interested in trying to document a lot of this excitement and a lot of this energy and enthusiasm around the growing public awareness that the media and communication system in our country needs to be changed and changed to represent and be closer to the people in this, to the citizens of this country. And so as a part of that, we've embarked on a research project to basically get a sense of why organizations got involved with this issue, with this debate on media ownership. Were they previously involved with it? What did they actually partake in? Were these, you know, more traditional aspects of reform movements? Were they just lobbying government officials, or, you know, interfacing with the mainstream political system, or were they involved in more radical activities and protesting in the streets and whatnot? And also get a sense of, you know, what side of the political spectrum you are on. So we have surveyed close to 90 groups across the United States that work in local domains or work nationally to really try and to take a snapshot of this, I'd say, fairly great historical moment where a lot of different things are converging and giving us a sort of optimism that change will happen. It may be slow and it may be difficult, but it certainly can happen.
What have you learned from your analysis of the survey results so far? I realize that you're just in that phase, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it.
The thick of excavating the various meanings of what people have said and how people have responded to our survey. And also we've simultaneously kind of conducted interviews with many organizations that were leading or sponsoring some of the public education or hearings around the country to get a closer sense of what went on. But without revealing too much, I think that would be a bit premature. One thing that really sticks out is the need for, or the importance, I should say, of organizations talking about media ownership and media concentration in really personal and human terms. It's no longer a technical issue. It's not about the 45% cap on ownership of stations in various markets throughout the United States. It's not about 45% or 35%. It's really about how people and how constituencies have lost their jobs, how they have been squeezed out of political conversations, how they can't get the information or the perspectives that they really need to make important political decisions. So I would say that is an incredibly salient revelation in the research that we've been doing thus far.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining me here this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Sita Gangadharan. Sita Gangadharan is the policy specialist for the newly formed nonprofit, the Center for International Media Action, and she's also working on her PhD in communication at Stanford University. For more information about this whole issue, you can check out mediaactioncenter.org.
Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada.